listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. Gordon Chang is in the house for his weekly visit, I'm very pleased to say. Gordon is, of course, one of the country's go-to authorities on matters involving Asia and the policies arising therefrom and what we should be doing in response, notably by Communist China and its proxy North Korea. He is a columnist for the Daily Beast. He contributes to Forbes.com and WorldAffairs.com. He's also a frequent guest at Fox News. And as I say, we're always pleased to have him here on our program. Gordon, welcome back. Good to talk with you.
Thanks so much, Frank.
So I understand that there is a big powwow going on in Washington this week on U.S.-Chinese economic policies. As we talked about early on in the Trump administration, a number of pretty hardline guys were brought in to advise on China policy, particularly from the economic point of view. Will they be prominently featured in this confab? And if so, or either way, really, what do you expect to come from it?
Well, thanks, Frank. And yes, the hardline guys, I think, will rule the day on Wednesday. That's the comprehensive and economic dialogue between China and the United States. At the end of the Mar-a-Lago meeting in early April between President Trump and his Chinese counterpart, Xi Jinping, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross announced a 100-day plan to reduce the U.S. trade deficit with China. Well, that 100 days expired on Sunday, and so what essentially we have is a 103-day plan because there's going to be discussions on where we stand with regard to the trade deficit. Now, Wilbur Ross, the Commerce Secretary, announced an early harvest on May 11th. But that early harvest actually looked to be in favor of China and could very well increase the trade deficit with China, which last year in goods and services was $309.8 billion. The reason why we might be going backwards is because President Trump said that he would be willing to give the Chinese a good trade deal if they were willing to help on North Korea.
Gordon Chang is in the house. We're talking with him about China and an economic summit that will be taking place this week in Washington, and a tie-in to the president's efforts to get Chinese help on North Korea. China's obviously not being all that helpful, but we seem nonetheless to be rewarding it. Gordon, is that the bottom line?
Well, we were in the beginning of May. Now, however, President Trump has a much more jaundiced view of the Chinese, I'd say more realistic. And so I think that we are going to see these trade tensions actually come to the fore. And that means the people like Peter Navarro, I think, are going to have a much greater say in America's trade policy with regard to China. And that's indeed a good thing.
Gordon, with respect to North Korea, there's some developments on the peninsula that are worth noting. We were speaking in the previous segment with Admiral Lyons about the military threat from North Korea and some of his suggestions about how to prepare to contend with that. But I'd like to ask you about what the South Korean government, newly elected President Moon, has embarked upon, a repetition, it seems, of a rather shopworn and unsatisfactory so-called sunshine policy. Tell us what's going on there and whether it's likely to bear any better fruit this time around.
Yeah, President Moon Jae-in, who was inaugurated on May 10th, immediately started to try to outreach to the north. He actually tried to offer malaria assistance as his first attempt to build bridges with Pyongyang. And the North Koreans rebuffed him. And they've rebuffed him on all of the initiatives since then, including ones just a few hours ago. And indeed, the North Koreans think that they really want to deal with the United States. They see South Korea as a puppet and not worth talking to. And that makes Moon Jae-in, with his sunshine policy 3.0, really in a very difficult place. And so I think what we're going to see is Pyongyang try to talk to the United States and not talk to the South Koreans.
And as the United States under President Trump is becoming more and more persuaded that the North Korean government and its nuclear and missile policies in particular poses a threat to us. Is there much likelihood that such efforts by the North will bear fruit?
Yeah, I don't think so right now. The North Koreans are not in the mood to talk to anyone. They're not in a position to talk to anyone. They've got all of the turmoil inside the regime. And of course, the United States realizes that talking to the North Koreans right now is premature. You know, Ronald Reagan talked to the Soviets, but only when the Soviets started to understand that they were gone and they had lost. And I think that, yes, it's time to talk to the North Koreans. Only when they realize they've got to give up their ballistic missiles and their nuclear weapons. So, you know, it's premature right now. I think the administration believes that. And as I mentioned, the North Koreans just at this point have too many problems inside their government or their regime. And then so they're just not in the position to have conversations with the United States or with anybody for that matter, except perhaps for the Chinese.
There are other indications of what the Chinese are up to that's also very worrying, Gordon. And you've observed that at various points in the past, the Chinese government has assured the world of its peaceful rise and its intentions to be a good neighbor and so on. No overseas military bases, I think, was one of the specific commitments. That's over the side, as I understand it. We are now seeing troops deployed to Djibouti in the Horn of Africa. Is that right?
Yes, that is right. There's a detachment of Chinese soldiers there. Ships have been pulling in. This is a promise that the Chinese government made to the world so many times, and it was phrased this way, that China would never maintain overseas military bases. Well, that's now been broken with their first one in Djibouti, and there are going to be many more going forward, including Gwadar in Pakistan. We're going to see, I think, within the next 2 years, a number of bases, perhaps as many as five, come into existence. You know, the Chinese, I think always all along had known that they were going to do this, but they just can't help themselves. They just had to lie to everybody.
Well, it does serve the larger strategic purpose of keeping people disarmed and allowing these policies to be put into place and then sprung on the world. Gordon, let me ask you about one other piece of what's been going on in China lately. Effectively the murder, I think it's fair to call it, of Lin Jiabao, the Chinese Nobel Peace Prize winning dissident who died shortly after he was very, very belatedly released from prison and awaiting some kind of decision by the Chinese as to whether he might get medical attention for terminal cancer before he passed away. He did pass away. It seems to have gone largely unremarked by the Trump administration. But how important was his life and what happened to him?
Yeah, Liu Xiaobo was the most prominent Chinese dissident for various reasons. Going back to Tiananmen Square, where he negotiated the safe release of hundreds of protesters, also because of Charter 08, a petition in 2008 for freedom and democracy, rule of law in China. He always maintained the highest ideals of humanity, and the Chinese denied him medical treatment. He died of liver cancer on Thursday, and it was murder. It can't be any other way. Now, Secretary Tillerson released a short statement, but what was really troubling, Frank, is that on the day that Liu died, Trump praised Xi Jinping in public when he was standing next to Emmanuel Macron, the French leader. And that really was wrong. First of all, praising Xi Jinping under any circumstances is wrong. But especially on the day that Liu Xiaobo died, calling Xi a good man, I think that that's unforgivable.
Gordon Chang, thank you so much for your time today. As always, it's a pleasure to catch up with you in Canada, I think, at the moment, and appreciate you taking the time each week with us. We'll talk with you again. We will be speaking next with Michael Rowan about Venezuela's plebiscite and more straight ahead.